So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Network, right here out of Louisville, Kentucky, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. We welcome you to the show, as always. And while you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, don't forget to join our RSS feed and join our Twitter account at MyViewMatters. Last night we made a challenge to quite a few of you guys. And, well, before we get there, let me tell you, Ed Martin is not here yet. He should be here momentarily. Again, you know, sometimes Ed runs into that situation where he's got to, you know, work at that business that Barack Obama built for him. So sometimes he runs a few minutes late. This is one of those times. But last night we issued a challenge on behalf of Louisville Politics and myself to get involved. We want to start hearing the stories of LMPD, corruption and abuse, Louisville Metro Police Department, and any of the second, third class cities. I don't care if it's Shively, West Butte, or whatever. Anybody that's been abused by the police. And, you know, we want to include the county attorney's office, too, because these guys will intentionally push charges just for no reason to ultimately dismiss them. But we issued that challenge last night. We want you guys to remember that challenge is there. Don't forget to write us at myviewmatters@aol.com. Let us know your story, or you can call us direct at 742-8519 and tell us your story. But it's fascinating because since I put that out there last night, the backlash has already begun. Now, let me tell you, you know, one of the things we talked about in that story last night, and, well, let's welcome to the program, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you?
Yeah, doing all right, sir. You're lucky to have me at all right now.
Yeah, that's what I was telling the audience, man. You're busy working that business Barack Obama built for you, so, you know. But I'm just talking about what we did last night. The backlash has already started. There's already been email, phone calls, all kinds of stuff today. Some of which are telling me about their experiences with the police. It's a very disturbing pattern of behavior that's been going on for quite a while. And others have been calling me a racist son of a bitch. And the reason I've been called a racist is because I accuse all the black Metro Council members and Reggie Meeks and Daryl Owens of showing up only because they were black and they were creating a racist mindset, and I was accusing them of being racist as well. I just thought I'd put that out there. I thought it was very, very funny, because anybody that listened to the show, instead of listening to somebody that has, you know, some kind of credibility, obviously clearly knows that I said this wasn't a racist thing, that was the perception, that, you know, this was a situation that we should build on and go in other directions. But, hey, you know, to each their own. How are you today, my friend?
So you to get me with we're fine raining Kentucky, so I can't do without doing all sorts of work, so in the yard and stuff. So Kentucky's growing like a rainforest right now.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Last week I had to cut my grass twice. That's how quick it was growing, because we're getting these brief showers in between, man. It makes this stuff just poof. It's really incredible what it does overnight. But welcome to the Ohio Valley. It's going to be that way for about another month, month and a half. Then it'll start drying out, and we'll be cutting grass a little bit less frequently, but we'll have to do it on a regular basis through the summer. In the meantime, we've got great news. Some great news, then we're going to get into some other stories. But three women in Ohio have been found safely after being presumed dead for about 10 years. You have Amanda Berry, who's now age 27, Michelle Knight, age 32, and Gina DeJesus, who's 23, had all been kidnapped and held captive around 2002-2003 by three Castro brothers in Cleveland. And they were actually found alive yesterday. That is just a miracle. I mean, it really is. You know, how many times do we have a situation where people have been kidnapped to disappear for this length of time to show up alive? You know what I mean? I thought it was very interesting. But there's a downside to this, Ed. Can you imagine what it is? Are you there, Mr. Martin? Well, I guess we lost Ed real quick. He'll join us again in a second. I don't know what's going on, but the downside is there you are. Do what now?
Mm-hmm. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. What's going on with your cell phone, man?
I don't know. You know, I don't live in a bunker, so I have to come outside, and all of a sudden you can hear me. So
that's odd.
But, you know, I do not live in a bunker. I want to be clear about that. So
yes, you do. You're a survivalist, man. Yeah. Actually, I find that odd, because
aside from planting a few tomatoes, I am not a prepper.
Well, what I find interesting, Ed, about this story coming out of Ohio, number one, it's a miracle these people are alive. Apparently, they've been held captive, tied up, and held naked and all kinds of stuff for over 10 years by these three, you know, bad guys. But what's really interesting here is, and once again, you know, last night I focused a lot on LMPD doing stupid stuff like they did to Jason Osborne, to me, and a whole host of others throughout this community, instead of doing real police work. And here in Ohio, three times over the last 10 years, the police had an opportunity to find these women and did not. Apparently, one neighbor called the police because one of the women was seen naked, crawling on her hands and knees in the backyard of the house they were found at just a few years ago. Another one had heard pounding on the doors, and there was plastic bags over the windows. The police showed up both times but never went inside. You know, the police also came in 2004, and nobody answered the door, so they never went back. You know, it's amazing that these three women are still alive and, you know, ready to go a decade later. I find it incredible that, once again, you've got three situations, you know, that involve police officers. These happen to be Cleveland, not Louisville, but we have the same situation. You know, and all three times, they didn't bother following up. How disturbing is that these three women had to go through this for the last 10 years when this could have been, you know, they could have been released a long time ago.
It's, you know, the cops need probable cause. We live in a country where they, you know, on one hand, we're complaining last week that they come punching their way through doors looking for a 19-year-old terrorist, and then, by the same token, they can't barge in. So it's a dilemma in those cases. I mean, if the guys can sell it, they can sell it. I mean, not like it hasn't happened with Elizabeth Smart, not like it didn't even happen with Jeffrey Dahmer. And, hell, for that matter, even John Wayne Gacy. I mean, some of these bad people, they can pull it off. I'd be sweating bullets, you know. I'm not I'm too into the truth. But you know, that's a tough one for me because, like I say, I certainly don't want to hear stories of the cops knocking on the door, deciding they don't like the way you look, and just kicking the door open. You know, they can't do that either. So,
well, it's interesting. But what makes it really interesting to me, though, I mean, you can't beat the door down. Okay, I'll meet you halfway with that. But we've had all kinds of opportunity. There was at least three different times that they went to the house. You know, you've got reports of banging from inside the house. That's probable cause because of abuse these days. That's probable cause. You know, you've got witnesses that claim they're seeing a woman crawling on her hands and knees naked. You know, that's enough to make you at least go back if nobody answers the door. And these people didn't do any of that. I mean, that's what's disturbing to me.
Yeah, the cops definitely should have pressed it a little harder. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, now around here, they're going to search warrant if your electric bill goes too high. You know, they think you're growing pot indoors. So, yeah, the bags over the windows and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, and from what I've gathered, it's also, you know, the guy who found them. Now, if you haven't seen that interview, if you haven't, you really need to see that interview. That guy is so animated. He's great. He's absolutely great. And he's a hero, you know, he really is. But if one thing that caught me is he said he'd only been in that neighborhood about a year. So it sounds like a renter's neighborhood, you know. So it's, you know, people moving in, moving out. So maybe nobody has time to get to know your neighbors too much or pick up on some habits or see some stuff. I mean, you know, that's potential too. That's, you know, it's just a condition. I'm actually going to kind of halfway side with the police on this. I don't want them kicking in my door. I don't want them doing the Boston thing, the water, you know, the Watertown thing.
I'm not necessarily going down the road where I'm trying to, you know, say that the police should have these, you know, rights that they're not entitled to, because that's what we're fighting against. I'm not hypocritical here. All I'm saying is if they've had, you know, multiple calls, you know, to the same address, you know, for questionable behavior, naked women crawling around on their hands and knees in a neighborhood, you know, then you've got people screaming and banging on stuff from inside the house, you know, I don't expect them to go into that house without probable cause. Because that's a violation of my Fourth Amendment, and probable cause is crazy the way they interpret it these days. But what I do expect is for them to be on alert that there are problems from that location and to kind of pay attention. You know what I mean? Drive by every now and then. Do something to cause some discomfort. You know, you're going to drive, you're going to do these drive through neighborhoods all the time. Make that a little priority because you've got a house that you know that there's problems in. You know, just drive through. Make a presence. Something. All right? And that's what I'm getting at. They did absolutely nothing. And that's the difference for me. Yes,
well,
they also,
like I say, you need the backstory because somebody may have called and told the police, hey, you know, I just saw a naked woman crawling across the yard. You know, the police obviously showed up, and maybe they asked the neighbor, hey, are you willing to make a sworn statement so we can get a warrant? And it's possible. I mean, there's so much we don't know. It's possible the neighbor could have said, no, you know, beyond making the call because that really looked out of place, no, I'm not going to get involved. That is a potential as well. So, like I said, we don't know the backstory on it, you know. And the banging, you know, it could have been those guys could have simply answered the door and said, oh, yeah, we're in the Slayer. It's all good. You know, we were just jamming.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's fine. I'm just saying, you know, but there should have been something. After three different times, you know, there was something that needed to be looked at, investigated, or talked about, and was not.
Yeah.
Three times over
10 years, too. So, and
well,
like I say, the transient nature of society, the people, the neighbors had probably moved in and out, so the new neighbors didn't have a clue of what happened 3 years ago kind of thing. And mm-hmm. it's possible that the police had changed, you know, guys changing precincts or districts or whatever, and maybe he moved out. Maybe the guy that made the original call isn't working in that district. Because it was over 10 years. So, I mean, I'm not sitting here defending the police. I think it's horrible that it went on as long as it did when there were opportunities. But, you know, that's the downside to having rights. Because if it would have been, you know, a different country, they'd say, you know, if you have a woman in your backyard, boom, you know, and the door's open. It's on.
they do. Well,
don't
they do believe.
Wrong.
Well, they do believe that, you know, there was sexual abuse and everything else involved here. Amanda Berry, apparently they found a six-year-old child there, and they're speculating that that is actually Amanda Berry's child by one of these rapists. So, you know, we've got that going. And I'm totally with you. I'm not necessarily willing to go down the road saying that the police are at fault here. I'm just saying, I guess at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I hope that they have learned something from this that will help them target these kind of people sooner, because 10 years in captivity.
Also, as you're fond of saying a lot of times, people need to get involved. Like you said, we don't know the backstory. We don't know if
we do know that people did get involved.
Give us a sworn statement. You know, the police can say, can you give us a sworn statement? We can get a warrant or something. You know, it's very possible that some neighbor says, oh, no, not getting into that with the neighbors. No, sir.
Well, that's speculation, but we do know that people did get involved because there were phone calls made to the police. So they did get involved. Now, to what extent that involvement was after the phone call, we don't know. But they did get involved by making that initial effort to call the police. So I want to make sure our listeners understand, you know, make an effort to do something. By calling the police, they tried to do something. And those neighbors should be commended for that, you know. So I'm not willing to go down that road either. We do have some interesting stories going on here locally. Then we're going to get into some national stuff, like the illegal immigration bill and Benghazi. Can't wait to get into that story. But at WFPL, a friend of ours over there, Philip Bailey, put out a story today. It's just one of those feel-good stories talking about how Councilwoman Attica Scott and Christopher 2X, if you can believe that, Attica Scott and Christopher 2X are putting together this compassion walk to commemorate some Parkland shootings that happened last year. There was a triple homicide in a Parkland neighborhood last year. And, this happened. What's really so astounding about this is at least one of the shootings in a triple homicide occurred right in front of people. All, you know, people were looking at everything. You had local media there. You had police officers. Everybody in Louisville remembers
this. Yeah, the place was crawling with police.
Right. So everybody remembers this. And, you know, and of course, obviously, it sparked some major local outrage with residents, elected officials, all this other crap. The mayor puts together this so-called task force. You know, again, our first thing to do is put together a task force to study on how to do something, but we never follow through. And that goes for Greg Fisher as well. Well, anyway, this morning, Attica Scott, Councilwoman Attica Scott out of 1st District, she's a beneficiary of me impeaching Judy Greene, and Christopher 2X decided they were going to hold a moment of silence on May the 17th, and it was going to feature Metro Police Chief Steve Conrad. And then they were going to have this compassion walk on May 18th at the site of the three homicides. Now, here's the problem, and this don't sound like much of a problem to most people, but it is to me. Are we ever going to get to the point where we quit having these moments of silence and doing these walks to bring attention to something that's already happened, you know, this case a year ago, and finally decide we're going to get together and try to achieve results? And I tell you, what really makes this story interesting and what really stands out in my mind, that one of the victims, grandfather, said he sees this as nothing more than Attica Scott and Christopher 2X trying to get some publicity. I thought it was pretty interesting because what Attica Scott wanted to say was that she is hoping that it will help people reflect on the fact that they've lost way too many lives in the city of Louisville to senseless and unnecessary gun violence, and also want to ask people what they're doing to make a difference in neighborhoods that are going through this. You know, so she's given us the generic political answer. Now, this happened in her district over a year ago. You know, at that time, she was promised that she was going to do everything she could to make it better. And this is her answer to that? And then she ties herself with Christopher 2X?
Yeah.
How do they justify this?
Well, I don't see it as a bad thing. I just see it as a sort of spitting in the wind thing. I mean, we've been doing this for as long as you and I can remember when, you know, Lewis Coleman, love him or hate him, you know, Lewis Coleman did this a lot. And in some instances, he was pretty damned effective at it. So, I mean, it's been going on for a long time. I say Lewis Coleman used to do this. I think he did it every week for, like, years, had him a march, you know. And
the only thing Lewis Coleman was ever effective at doing this garbage was bringing attention to himself and being fed fed hush money by local business. That was it. He benefited himself greatly.
The point I'm making is it's been done. It's been done and done and done again. So I think at some point, you know, you try to step away from the definition of insanity and quit doing the same thing, thinking, you know, this time it's going to stick. You know me, I've always said the reason they need jobs down there. They need neighborhood rejuvenation. I mean, a lot of times, it amazes me. They look at things like, let's beautify the neighborhood. Well, let's beautify the neighborhood by getting a small business set up in some of those vacant buildings, you know, those vacant commercial buildings. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice gesture. I'm sure the families, except for that grandfather, he's calling it like he sees it. But, yeah, it's definitely good for publicity. Can't argue that point. But, you know, as far as the effectiveness goes, I mean, rather than have a moment of silence, why not have some sort of community, you know, some community cleanup or something like that, or you know, God forbid, should one of the council critters or more than just Attica Scott, you know, if they get $200,000, they get discretionary money and pay for some overtime for some cops to cruise the area a little heavy, you know, something like that. Something.
You know, Ed, my friend, you know, I think the greatest of you, and I love you to death, but I'm in total disagreement with everything you just said, and I've got to be honest with you. I mean, you know, neighborhood cleanups, all that crap, it's nothing but putting daggone lipstick on a pig. The pig is still, at the end of the day,
I'm just saying it's better than a moment of silence. It's like,
What I'm saying is this. There were three people killed last year in Parkland. Craig Bland Jr., he was 22, Tyson Mims, 24, and Makiba Lee, who was 24 as well. Now, Lee's grandfather is the one who made the statement. His name is Ed White. He's the founder of River City Drum Corps. And what he says is that these issues are based on a lack of education and lack of employment opportunities that keeps young African-American males isolated. He's calling it like it is. And he says, for our politicians to sit around and come up with a march is insensitive, unprofessional, and grandstanding. That's what he says. And I totally agree with that, because that's exactly what they're doing. These politicians aren't doing anything meaningful.
Then you don't disagree with everything I said, because I was saying, you know, let's get some, rather than have moments of silence, let's do something productive.
I'm sorry.
I specifically said, hey, let's get some, you know, let's work on getting some small businesses down there rather than march around, you know, find a way to make it work.
There you go. I apologize, because I got hung up on the neighborhood cleanup crap, and that just totally drives me nuts.
Oh, no, that was just for comparison's sake.
Okay.
Moment of silence versus walking around with a garbage bag and cleaning crap up off the side of the street.
I stand corrected,
it's better than a moment of silence.
I stand corrected, sir, and I appreciate that. Let's go to the phones. Mayo, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, man?
Oh, if I remember the one you said, there was already a shooting, and then the two girls, something happened, and one got shot. Is that the story, if I remember it correctly?
It all happened on the same day, just a few minutes apart, actually, down in Parkland, yes.
I mean, for the education, like the dad said, because there was an article I'd read, and there used to be like a, I don't know if it was, church and government, but a community center, and then it had shut down, and I believe one of the guys who had gotten shot used to be a member of that community center, and with it, it stayed out of trouble, so maybe not a neighborhood cleanup like Ed was saying, but a community center where they can get education that's open, where, you know, there's somebody there, you know, whether you want, you know, it's also maybe a police substation or someplace kids can go for help, or if they got a question, you know, something like that, I would agree with. They want to spend $200,000 to do it that way.
Well, that's the thing. They have $250,000 in discretionary funding every year. They spend that doing neighborhood cleanups and stuff when they should be doing that, you know, trying to put that money in a pool and bring small business or something to the West End and create opportunity, economic opportunity and advancement, or like Ed even mentioned, pay for a little bit of overtime to have some police officers get a presence there. You know, it's interesting, too, because, you know, Attica Scott is out there lying to the people about who was contacted. One of the problems that Mr. White had on behalf of Makiba Lee, the grandfather, was the fact that none of the family was contacted about this or even asked to participate. Scott says that she's sure that Christopher 2X invited some of the family members because he told her on several occasions that he was in contact with Mr. Bland and speaking to the mother of Makiba Lee. Now, the grandfather, Ed White, Miss Lee's father, told WFPL that when he talked to Miss Lee, she hadn't heard of any marches to mark any anniversary or was included in any way. You know, and that's the thing, and this is the next telling thing for me, too. I love this statement, because Ed White goes on to say that Christopher 2X has made a career on people dying. He's Dr. Death. Where is the respect and common decency for the people this will affect for the rest of their lives? So even the African-American community, leaders like Mr. White, you know, even the African-American community, real leaders like Mr. White, are sitting out there and saying they're sick of the Christopher 2X, you know, ambulance-chasing bandwagon antics to keep himself relevant. I mean, this guy is a convicted felon who's never paid child support or anything else, quit a job that he had as a convicted felon at a White Castle warehouse here in Louisville. He quit so they couldn't garnish his paycheck to pay child support. Let's call a spade, folks. You know, and then goes out here and does this. At the same time, one thing nobody will verify with any proof is whether his girlfriend, wife, or whatever the hell her title is that's raising his children has been living on welfare. Because if she has been living on welfare, Christopher 2X goes back to jail. But because 2X goes out there and puts himself on TV and acts like this so-called leader, and he ain't nothing but garbage, they refuse to do anything with him. Oh, because he's a black guy. But Ed White, part of the community, is calling it like it is. And I commend the guy. I really do. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely, you got to respect the guy for standing up and saying exactly what he thinks for a change. So, yeah, I can stand with you and commend the guy. It's like, wow, that's some hard-hitting stuff. That's, you know, that's as they say, that's real right there. I mean, the guy lost his daughter, and he's
well,
in light of that, people are grandstanding off of it, and he didn't appreciate it one damn bit, and he's not going to keep his mouth shut. So, good for him.
Well, you know, and that's it. And Ed White goes on to say, you're going to have a march about my tragedy, but when are we going to stop marching and start doing? We've had almost 365 days since this happened. What program has Attica Scott implemented to address the issues of people not getting involved? Here is the anniversary of this very tragic event, and we're just now getting ready to march. And, of course, Christopher 2X could not be reached for comment by Philip Bailey. This guy can be reached for anything unless it's something he's going to be held accountable to, and then he can't be reached for comment. How pathetic is that? You know, so I like that. I like that a lot. Now, as far as Attica Scott, the only thing she has done is basically the neighborhood cleanup crap. It don't mean squat to anything. She's not doing one damn thing to benefit the area there. You know, and then you get people like David James, you know. No offense against David James. You know, David James is trying to do different things, and I've actually got a call into him now because I want to get his take on what happened with the Jason Osborne thing. I'll get a call back eventually, I guess. But, you know, but David James has started this No More Red Dots campaign, is involved in that with Eddie Woods of the Life Institute. Now, we had Eddie Woods of the Life Institute on our show, and we talked about the Life Institute's goals and everything else, and we also talked about the fact that Judy Greene tried to destroy the Life Institute because she was using them to funnel money. So, you know, there's a lot of things here. There's a lot of people involved. But the No More Red Dots campaign seems to be lipstick. But is it effective? You're not going around marching. You're pinpointing areas where people have been killed and areas that need to be watched and addressed. So when I do a comparison, I guess I have to like the No More Red Dots campaign a hell of a lot more than I like doing a march a year after somebody dies just to say, oh, somebody died a year ago. Comments?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I actually can respect the program that's No More Red Dots. It doesn't beg for publicity like this because, in empathizing a little bit with the father of the girl, I think sometimes when they have these marches, I think they absolutely, and unfortunately, I think they lose their impact. It's like, you know, whether it was Coleman, or I mean, how many times do you see the press sort of half fallen over themselves to photograph of, you know, whatever, 20 people marching down the street. I mean, gosh, you know, and I think people lose it. I think the marches, I think the tragedies at some point, they kind of lose their impact when that's what happens, when, you know.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that. And, you know, Eddie Woods of Life Institute, you know, he goes on to say that, you know, how can you talk about reducing violence or anti-violence programs and don't include the people who are most prone to be the culprits? You know, and that means that you have to talk to the ones who actually have the guns. You have to have them in a conversation at some point. And I agree with Eddie Woods. As radical as that may sound to some people, unless you know why these people continue to want to pull the guns and murder and do all the things that they do and understand, you know, exactly what's creating this problem, unless you can be willing to admit, you know, that we've got a problem, find out what's creating that problem, and seek solutions, you can march till your feet fall off. It doesn't matter. Marches don't do anything but give a photo op opportunity for politicians and other people who like to see their damn name in the paper. And, you know, that's the problem I've got with this. Attica Scott is chickening out on doing her damn job, and, you know, I am very offended by that myself. Go ahead, Mayo.
I was just listening to what y'all were saying there, but also something kind of local before you get into the Benghazi thing and that later. I just talked with a friend that works for MSD, and I didn't know if you'd known about this, but Obamacare just cost MSD, which I guess cost the city of Louisville, about $100,000 because of it. Each person on the workers' plan cost MSD like $5.24. So if you choose to keep your own insurance at work that you've already had, they're still charging you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that we know that going forward. I haven't broken down that cost. I'm glad you brought that to the table. But, yeah, we already knew about that. I mean, that was something we've talked about in discussing Obamacare in the past. You know, and as a matter of fact, I think, was it last night or one day last week, I can't remember what show it was, you know, I was actually talking about my own son's plan at the place he works at where he's keeping his plan, and his personal premiums have almost doubled, you know, just since Obamacare started being implemented. So we're aware of that situation. But, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, as you bring this up, we're spending a lot of time talking about folks like Darden Restaurants, who owns Olive Garden and a few other places, waiters and waitresses and low-income people getting their hours reduced to under 30 hours. But we really don't talk about the government employers because MSD charges us. They're not going to eat that $100,000. Our bills are going to go up. You know, so that's just another way to tell us that Obamacare is bad. Not only are you getting your hours cut, the government is going to make sure that your bills and your utility bills and everything else go up because they have to pay more money for benefits too. So that's an interesting contrast too. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, and finally, I really want to get into some of the national stuff. And I'll tell you what we're going to do, Ed. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break, come back. I want to talk about this illegal immigration bill. A couple of things in there, very interesting. And I want to get into Benghazi, man, so bad I can't stand it. So let's do that. We'll be right back, folks. This is the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. If you want to call in numbers as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Well,
Ah, yeah, little Eagles for you there, folks. Get over it. Not going to be a I hear that song all the time, and I just love it. I can't help it because it really tells the truth. Get over it. Get over your damn self. Move on with your business. Take care of business. And that's the problem with us. We've gotten so conditioned as a people that Big Brother is going to take care of us, that Big Brother is going to tell us how to do everything, that we don't stand up and tell Big Brother to shove it up his ass and get over it. You know what I mean? So I really like that song a lot.
Of course, we're told from a very early age that everybody cares about your problems, too.
Uh-huh.
It's like, no. I mean, some people may care about everybody else's problems, but generally most people have enough problems of their own that they don't have time to care about your problems. Sorry, it's nothing personal.
I totally agree, man. I totally agree. You know, I've got enough problems of my own, but I'm trying to save the world at the same time. So, you know, what the hell? Maybe they're self-created. I don't know. In the meantime, we've got all kinds of news out there. We know that the Senate immigration bill, it has been talked about for the last couple of weeks. We understand that. But we have some information coming out now that really should bring some, raise some eyebrows, I guess, if you will. A Washington group, it's a nonpartisan Center for Immigration Services, is criticizing the Senate immigration bill. And you can read this at foxnews.com. And don't give me the garbage about the source, because every source is different.
Hey, for what it's worth, if anybody thinks they're going to criticize you, we probably reference HuffPo more than we do any other news source. So,
HuffPo and CNN, both liberal entities. So, you know. But this group is criticizing the bill essentially because the bill allows for up to $150 million for organizations to do this. Check this out. To advertise citizenship opportunities and bring illegal immigrants in to sign up to become citizens. Now, that is very disturbing to me. It really is. You know, the Nonpartisan Center for Immigration Services says that the money is basically nothing more than slush funds. That this money, the biggest concerns they have is that the money that they've allocated, this $150 million, can go to the same groups that help craft the legislation. You talk about a conflict of interest, and that there is no cap or oversight on the spending. So they're saying that it's virtually a blank check. Should this alarm us, or is this just business as usual? We're used to this.
Well, if you've got your hands in the till, this shouldn't alarm you. This is cause for celebration, but, you know, I honest to God, I want to do politics again because I just want to get a format. I can blow their immigration bill out of the water.
Well, it's essentially the groups that helped put this bill together can now give themselves our money. They helped put a bill together that's going to benefit themselves. I mean, this is Enron all over. I mean, Enron helped write all the energy stuff with Dick Cheney, and we see how that worked out. This is the same damn thing.
And you can bet your ass that the bill, as it's being crafted, at the same time, if they think there's a chance for it to pass, some of their friends are going to be a head start on you, and you, as far as getting the paperwork done and getting the certifications done so they can get their hands in there faster than you can get yours in.
Oh, exactly. And the bill is basically, the money is basically divided into two parts. The first $100 million is using grants to public and private nonprofit groups. This is supposed to be to help people apply for immigrant status and to help them and to pay for assistance to complete applications and proof of identification. That's always funny to me when you talk about proof of identification, because I will guarantee you 9 out of 10 illegal immigrants have a fake ID in their pocket now. But the other part, of course, is $50 million left. That's going to include legal help and to pay for public awareness campaigns that's going to tell illegal immigrants about the eligibility and benefits of becoming a registered immigrant. I mean, this is ridiculous to me. Here we continue to talk about, you know, trying to stem the flow of illegal immigration in this country. We continue to talking about the millions and billions of dollars that illegal immigration costs this country. We know that most of the terrorist acts on this soil are because of people who are immigrants, and all these other things. I'm failing to see here, you know, now forgive me, but I'm failing to see here where Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio is doing anything to help with illegal immigration, or name me one Republican that is. We continue to trash the Democrats for trying to make everybody legal, but we've got another example here of the Republicans as part of that uniparty we always talk about, helping them accomplish it. So are we really doing anything about illegal immigration, or are we just giving it lip service and throwing money at it?
I think people are out there, both sides, realize that they're, you know, hell, if you're just talking about just the illegals, you're talking about 11 million votes, potential votes. If you're talking about, you know, all Hispanics, legal and otherwise, you're talking about a large, large segment of population, and it's all about politics. That is the core problem, is that they're fighting for money. Of course, money is the mother's milk of politics, so, you know, they take care of theirs, and whoever those people are will make sure to take care of, you know, the politician that got them that money, you know, helped them get into the cookie jar. The other part is just votes. I mean, the Republicans are warming up to this because they realize one of the big reasons they got shellacked in the presidential election was the Latino vote. You know, it's like you can't, you know, and I've said it before, the fact is there's 11 million illegals. I don't know how they know how many illegals are in here because they're illegal. They're undocumented. Might be more, might be less. Let's admit that. But, you know, I just think everybody's jockeying for money and votes. That's just what it is, and everybody realizes it, but they're trying not to upset their base one way or the other and trying to tiptoe around it. And the fact is it's really, I can tell you, that with a conversation with two smart guys I know, we sat there and jawboned this thing out, and we figured we pretty much solved it, but I'm not going to tell anybody just yet. I may wait till I run for something.
And for those of you who think I may be one of those two smart people he's talking about, you are dead wrong. I'm not one of those smart people, and he certainly didn't talk to me.
Oh, God, I wonder what sort of effort solution Martin came up with now.
Well, yeah, actually, I've seen some of your solutions before. They are kind of comical, but they're always dead on. That's what's really funny. But in this particular case, too, and by the way, Fox News, I know you guys have people that listen to this show. I see your ISP addresses, your IP addresses. But Fox News, really, you need to find somebody that when you put a story up online that knows how to edit a story. I know it's a small thing, but they're talking about Marco Rubio and, as a leader of the bipartisan group of 8 senators that drafted the immigration reform legislation, which will impact roughly 11 people now living in the U.S. illegally. Now, think about this. This will impact roughly 11 people. You know, I know it was unintentional, but really that's something small that these guys should be able to take care of.
Come on, Dr. Evil. That's 11 million people.
There you go. We look at this story and we continue coming back to the same damn thing. Who really is doing anything to get illegal immigration under control? Because all this is going to do is they're ultimately going to have the amnesty that they want. You know, if they can't find volunteers to help fill out paperwork, then this program isn't worthy anyway. I'm not willing to pay somebody to fill out paperwork for an illegal immigrant to fill out so they can stay here. I'm willing to pay for a C-130 aircraft to take every illegal they can round up, put in the back of the plane, and drop them off with a parachute on their back over Tijuana. That's the image that we need to portray. That's what we have to portray. That's what we have to show is that we're tough on immigration. This is ridiculous.
You and I, we would definitely clash on that. I support a measure of amnesty, but with a certain sting. And, you know, and I know a lot of people say, oh, well, Reagan did amnesty. It's like, yes, he did 30 years ago.
If we
haven't learned anything from how to do it, how to do it better the second time around, well, then we're pretty much screwed anyway. It doesn't matter what we do. So, I mean, I think we've learned enough from what happened.
For me, that's like taking a guy that robs a bank and giving him the keys to the vault so the next time he comes in, it's easier. I'm rewarding that illegal and bad behavior. I don't like that. That's not right for me.
I don't think it rises to that, you know, I don't think it rises to the level of bank robbery. I mean, there's people that are honest to God, they're most of them. Now, granted, there is a criminal element, get your ass out of the country. Criminal element, take your C-130, but forget the parachute, right? But,
I'm a
most of them are just people that want to better their lives, and, you know, and they grew up in rural parts of Central and South America, probably can't even read the laws. All they know is if they can go to America, they can possibly score enough money to send home and feed their kids.
Can't read the books, and I've got to spend more money to give you stuff in your own language so you can learn what you should be learning that every other American is learning. Go ahead, Mayo.
I just going to say, you know, with the immigration thing, I mean, pardon the terminology, but you can Google it. I can't remember who was the president right after Korean War, Truman or Eisenhower, but it was called Operation Wetback, and to so that the soldiers, they had, you know, to force the employers to pay legal wages back then, so the soldiers coming back from the Korean War would have jobs. They rounded up like 1.2 million illegal immigrants back then and took them back to, you know, Mexico or wherever.
Well, the actual guy that brought Operation Wetback was Eisenhower. Eisenhower is the one who had that, and it all went through the director. Joseph Swing, the director of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, is the one who did that. But the thing is, you know, I like that because we have soldiers around the world right now who have literally nothing to come home to. We have a massive high unemployment rate in America that is underreported by at least 50% or better. So, you know, we've got all of these different things, and yet we've got illegal immigrants in here working these jobs, and these employers are getting richer. We know that the disparity between the top wage earners at the top of these corporations and the guys who are on the line making the real money and creating the real product is worse today than it's ever been in our history. So we've got a lot of problems that could be solved or at least worked towards a solution by basically claiming our sovereignty again. Now, I'm not uncompassionate, for lack of a better word, Ed, or Mayo, but the reality is when I used that bank robber terminology a second ago, Ed, I was dead serious about that because when you're an illegal immigrant, you're coming into this country, you're going to a hospital getting free medical care. That costs us. You know, wages cost us. If you're drawing anything with a fake ID, Section 8, food stamps, anything else, that costs us. So you are robbing. You're robbing our treasury. You're robbing the taxpayer. You know, now that may be a stretch in some situations, but that's really how I look at it. Am I wrong?
Well, I think there's different levels. I think there's without a doubt, there's a criminal element that comes across. There's an element that comes across that is looking to score as much welfare as possible. And then I still think the majority are coming across. They're willing to bust their ass for, you know, minimum wages. And I'm sure in a lot of cases they have taxes taken out. You know, they're passing a Social Security card and stuff. And, you know, they're just wanting to send money home. They're just wanting to, you know, to help out the family back home. I mean, that's always been, you know, a fairly well-known thing. And one of the biggest industries in Mexico was, you know, the biggest money maker was having people working in America sending money home. That bolstered the local economies and a lot of local economies. So I think it's a combination, and I think it takes a combination approach. I mean, like you say, no doubt, there are some horrific criminal elements that are probably not only criminals and killers, and then, hell, they're probably hurting the system anyway. You know, they get shot, they go to a hospital, it's astronomical bills. You know, they got to go.
But as we mentioned, Ed, you know, that in the past seems to be what was happening. The men would come here, make a better way, send money back home to raise their wife, their kids, and all the other stuff. But as we've already mentioned on this show, and I think we did last night, correct me if I'm wrong, but we also mentioned the fact that Mexico's got a big problem right now because there's no money coming back home. That once these breadwinners leave and come to the U.S., they're abandoning their wife and their kids back in Mexico and not sending them a dime anymore. They're keeping it all for themselves and trying to enjoy the American way of life. So this whole myth of sending their money back home, and it's the right thing to do because these people are just trying to get ahead with their families, that's completely gone now, too. So it's not a matter of that anymore.
I'm sure that happens. And I think our countries need to work together on that, need to find a, you know, because a deadbeat dad, that's a criminal. And if it's a deadbeat dad, you know, he needs to be treated just like any other deadbeat dad. And, you know, if you don't want to send your money back voluntarily, well, we'll take it from you.
Well, we don't even do that correctly here, because the poor people get to go to court and go to jail if they get behind on their child support, but the rich guy just totals up $4 or $5 million and never has to worry about it. So, yeah, we can talk about that too. You know, I tell you what, we're going to run out of time quickly. I apologize to you listeners, but we're going to get off of this subject because I want to talk about Benghazi, and I'll get really into detail with Benghazi tomorrow night with Dale, I'm sure. But I've wasted too much time to do it justice tonight. Ed, no, we're gonna discuss it for a minute. We got a couple of minutes here, but okay. You know, I'm very disturbed by what I'm hearing coming out of these reports and these whistleblowers that we've got right now. It's fascinating to me that now we've got whistleblowers coming through that are telling us the truth of what happened in Benghazi, the truth that they were ordered to stand down rather than aid our people. You know, Gregory Hicks is one of the American officials in the Libyan capital. When we first got wind that this was going on, and remember, we knew this was going on in advance. Libya has already said that. We already know this. We have got testimony now that says we knew in advance that this attack was going to happen. But Hillary Clinton refused to do anything about it, and Barack Obama ignored it. But now we've got Gregory Hicks, a U.S. diplomat. He's, from what I understand, his career man, about 23 years in. He sought permission to send some special operations troops to Benghazi aboard a Libyan military aircraft. And they were told to stand down. Now, of course, department officials at the Defense Department have tried to lie and say that nobody could have responded in time. They didn't have enough, you know, they didn't have enough lead time on it and everything else. You know, and we're finding out that that's a lie. Gregory Hicks is scheduled to do a hearing Wednesday, you know, in front of Congress over this. What do you think about a statement like that?
Well, I you know, when this happened, we pretty much, I think anybody with a brain could connect the dots. I mean, obviously, there was time to respond because the two special ops guys went in and responded after being told not to, thinking about it a few minutes and going. So, I mean, obviously there was time to respond. And again, from the get-go, there was always somebody, and you start seeing the videos of it. This was an attack. This wasn't just a demonstration of about a video that went to, you know, that went viral and pissed people off. You know, and we discussed that. You know, oh, well, they sprung into action. They arrested the guy who made the video, drug him out of his bed in the middle of the night. You know, and, you know, it's just the diversions. The thing, it never made sense from the beginning. And when you and I talked about it right after it happened, I remember we were saying stuff like, my God, you know, what do you mean you weren't on alert? You're in an unstable Arab country. You know, there's elements of, you know, Taliban and Islamist extremists. And, you know, on top of that, these people have just finished fighting. So, you know, wasn't anything new for them. And it's 9/11, and you were sort of standing down. It's like, okay, come on, people, connect the dots. I mean, the national news probably had more on 9/11 than apparently thought it was more important than you did. Just celebrating the anniversary of it or something. So, none of it would have added up when they were saying, well, there's nothing more we could have did. You know, okay, that was bull crap because two individuals did more. You know, they managed to get there. You know, that they didn't have any advance warning. Do you really need any? It was 9/11, okay? Things happen on certain dates.
Well, yeah.
And to me, it's just more a matter of, okay, look, we all kind of knew you were lying about it and playing it off and trying to blame it on some kid who made a video and other ridiculous stuff like that. That's no mystery to me. I just want to know who was behind it, you know, because obviously you were lying. Obviously you were fabricating stories. Obviously you were deflecting culpability. Just want to know who, because it was too obvious happening.
And that's part of the thing, because this wasn't a situation where Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama could claim plausible deniability. They intentionally created this mystique about this garbage video that five people in the whole world might have seen as being a catalyst of an instant decision to ram the compound. We now know that, you know, the U.S. Special Operations Command in Africa, are the ones who ordered us to stand down based on orders from Washington. Gregory Hicks was the deputy of U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, who was killed in that attack. You know, and Lieutenant Colonel Gibson was the commander of Special Operations Command Africa. You know, the team was already getting ready to load a C-130, ready to get there, had no problem. Lieutenant Gibson got the phone call that says you can't go, stand down, so they weren't allowed to leave. You know, and then according to Greg Hicks, you know, the lieutenant colonel actually called him after this was over and apologized to him because his men had been held back. And then he went on to say that I've never been so embarrassed in my life that a State Department officer has bigger balls than someone in the military. You know, and he's right. How can this happen, you know, at this level? And for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to intentionally and knowingly lie about this situation that caused American lives, that's the most disturbing part of all.
Yep.
If mistakes are made, that's one thing. But if it's intentional, you know, it's the intent here that's the problem for me.
Yeah, it's the intent. It's the intent, and even if it was a mistake, which, you know, on some levels it was, own up to it.
Sure.
You know, don't just sit there and say, "What does it matter now?" I cried when they took the caskets off the airplane. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, don't blame it on some kid who made a smart ass video about somebody else's religion. Own up to it, you know, say, well, damn it, we really screwed up. This one's up to me. No, you got to put it on some kid who made a video. You know,
well, I totally agree.
Seriously, you're the leader of the free world. Own the hell up to it.
Well, I think ultimately, Mayo, you can go ahead and weigh in here before I go on. Go ahead, man. Hello. Okay, I guess Mayo's gone. You know, ultimately, Ed, I mean, it really comes down to a lot of things. And, you know, the disturbing thing is that they lied. You know, Obama has had one simple foreign policy in mind with the Muslim world. He'd been trying to tell us forever that if we engage in a little bit softer way, we don't antagonize them, that we're going to be safe. There is nothing further from the truth, and I hope that by Gregory Hicks and these other people going forward, that they're going to basically be able to prove to the world that Obama lives in some kind of delusional world and that he has to be held accountable. I just don't know any other way to do it. We are out of time, my friend. Wow, the hour goes fast. Go ahead, final thoughts.
Hey, same as last night. Stay cynical, my friend.
Well, that was easy. All right. You know, that's pretty easy for me to do these days. You know, at one time I was a very positive guy, and I've kind of gotten out of that since I've had to start doing this research and find out what's really going on. Bottom line, people, is, you know, my friend Ed Martin says to stay cynical. I agree with that. But more importantly, stay involved.
Yep.
You can stay cynical, but get involved. Because cynicism, just being cynical is one thing. I can sit here and say the world is bad, but what am I actively doing to make the world a better place? What am I actively doing to make my household a better place, my neighbor a better place? You know, we've got to understand this going forward. When we continue to have lies and deception and all the other things that this so-called leadership is doing to us, we've got the Unit Party alive and well working together to thwart us and to hold us down. We've got major problems. When you talk about the police and Department of Homeland Security on a national level, and you put all these things down, you've got major problems. You've got major problems. We have got to gain control. You know, when people fear their government, what does that mean, Ed?
Something wrong, friend.
There you go, because that's exactly what it means. We should never fear our government, folks. The old saying is a real simple one. And it goes something like this, okay? When the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When a government fears the people, there is liberty. So the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to be free or not? Because freedom is not free, regardless of what the word entails. Freedom is something that you have to want, that you have to fight for, that you have to fight with every breath in your soul to maintain. And when we have become so fearful of our government and so lackadaisical in holding them accountable, we created this tyrannical reign that we're under right now and have been for quite some time. This isn't just Barack Obama. This has been a systemic ploy through every Republican and Democrat member of the Unit Party for many, many years. And it's up to us to wake up and make a difference. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here, of course. God only knows where we're going to go with that one, man. You guys know how that one goes. Tune in. Make sure you're here. Don't forget our good friend.
And, of course, much to Dale's pleasure, we'll be one day further into the hearings on Benghazi. So
yes, we will.
I'm sure it's just going to get – I'm sure the rabbit hole gets deeper.
Well, actually, I can't wait to see the reports out of there because Wednesday is when the hearings are supposed to start with Gregory Hicks. So I'm looking to see how hard they hit those hearings from the very outset, and hopefully we'll have some information on that on Wednesday night. But that's it for tonight, folks. Don't forget tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here on Thursday night with the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show, and our good friend Ken Moman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday. Yep, you guessed it, at 7 o'clock. In the meantime, have a great night. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon, my friend, Mr. Ed.
Talk to you soon, Mr. Ed.
Take care.